are Paul Pangaro, Karen Chang, and Antoinette Carroll. I'm going to give deeper introductions to all of them. They will present in that order. So here's just a reminder of what those trends were. Meredith wrapped it up in her presentation as well, so I'm not going to go into them, but I just wanted you to see them again, that these are the core trends that are discussed in that document. So we'll start with Paul. Paul Pangaro is an expert in systems and cybernetics for design and has published and spoken extensively on the topic. He's taught design at the School of Visual Arts and Stanford, and in 2015 joined the faculty at the College for Creative Studies in Detroit to define their interaction design MFA. Paul has consulted with numerous companies throughout his career, including Nokia, Samsung, DuPont, Ogilvy & Mather, and the Poetry Foundation. Please welcome Paul.
Thank you very much. Do I need a microphone? Yes, it is. Somehow technology is always disappointing. It's a shame. Thank you for having me here today. And I appreciate Meredith's comments very much. As usual, they're insightful and clear and very important. She's right to bring up Thomas Kuhn. The shift in paradigm for design is the result of larger shifts, however. Kuhn focused on paradigm shifts in science. And today we're seeing a shift in the way that science is actually done. A shift from sampling data and making a theory to continuously measuring data and continuously acting on it. This is revolutionary. The shift opens up new domains for us, new possibilities. They are manifest first in engineering and then in products. For example, Amazon Alexa, Google Home, and the like. But these are not 20th century products, nor are they objects. They are not even merely digital computers. They're a new paradigm. They're what Jody Forlitzi calls product service ecologies, systems of hardware, networked applications, and human services. These new domains that are opened up should frighten us, but also give us hope for the new possibilities. We've already seen that the new platforms have the power to influence national elections here and in the UK. In fact, they offer the potential for new kinds of interaction, however, and more nuanced, more subtle interaction, more akin to human conversation, although there's a long way to go. As Aaron said, I moved to Detroit about 2.5 years ago to chair a new department in interaction design, granting MFA degrees in a 2-year program. I came with the charter to recast the curriculum, and I spent much of my time there at the College for Creative Studies, CCS, to understand what I feel and what I find my colleagues feel are important for designers to know in the next 30 years. What will make them literate in design? Literacy, of course, is a competency to read, comprehend, and to write, create, and extend in a given domain. It looks like I've started a slideshow. It's this technology thing, you know? It's not necessary, but better than the distraction. So, what literacies are necessary for the future of the design practice? Well, the first one is systems. Now, clearly this room is full of experts in grid systems, wayfinding systems, identity systems, and much more. In addition, design needs to be concerned about systems that come from computing technology and its role in human as well as technology-to-technology communications. When these go on steroids, as they have recently, and include objects and sensors and big data and more, we call it the Internet of Things, or even the Internet of Everything. Now, these systems are ruled by digital paradigms. The predominance of these technologies argue for coding literacy for designers. Designers should grok the logic of digital code and know how to code, if only to get the job that would go to a coder plus designer rather than just a designer. And I've seen this happen. So literacy of the rules and limitations of digital codes. The Internet of Things and cloud computing are all catchphrases which belie the power of the platforms that invade our lives so thoroughly. Google, Facebook, Amazon, and the leviathan of economic value creation provided by the countless advantages in moving bits rather than atoms. Surely designers need some literacy in this, the power of platforms. Then there are the natural and biological, and ecological systems, and the systems of human organizations, and the interactions and awareness of unintended consequences that come from all of those many entanglements. Once the domain of design expanded from form-giving to creating systems that support human interactions, systems literacy becomes a necessary foundation for design. At CCS, our interaction design program is a human design program. And I want to emphasize that I mean this beyond simply human-centered design. That phrase is at least a commitment to a class of research and also a commitment to ethical values, to include users in the design process and even, please, to bring design to a future ideal state where users are able to design for themselves, for their own future, to design who they want to be and who they may want to become. But now I want to juxtapose the idea of systems I've been talking about and the idea of human agency, which requires a methodology of its own beyond vanilla systems modeling and systems dynamics and the wonderful work of Donella Meadows. It goes a step further. In a recent paper, Hugh Deberle and I offer an extended syllogism that argues, starting from design, that we must embrace systems, which must include modeling systems with agency, that is, humans, and possibly also configurations with certain AIs, which then must encompass intersubjectivity, also known as problem framing, and landing finally on the need for conversation in design. So a compression of our argument is, if we want to design, we need the literacy of conversation. Only from conversation comes agreement, and only from agreement comes the coordination of action that we call society. The wicked problems of today, or even just the really hairy ones, require collaboration to agree on what we're trying to do. That is, collaboration to agree on goals. This requires conversation and a richness of points of view in conversation. To put it another way, design is conversation. Now, there are formal ways of talking about the nature of conversations and the range and depth that a conversation must bear to yield effective designs. This we call technically variety. It's a key factor in resilience. It's as important as having variety needed in a conversation for designing as it is important for having designers in a conversation. Let's call this the literacy of collaboration. We're taking seriously collaboration as a practice. So, literacies of systems, including human agency and purpose. Code, platforms, collaboration. I'd like to close by answering the question, to what end? What do we as designers want from our designing? I construe design as creating conditions for who we want to be and for who we want to become. Call this facilitating users, people, anyone, to design our own lives. In today's entanglements, designers must engage in conversation to explore what is possible and decide what is preferable. What do we want to conserve and what do we want to change individually and collectively? So, two, would anyone who wishes to design their own lives? So in summary, my main point for the future of design education would be to recognize that just as design is conversation, it is our role to educate other designers to design for conversation for everyone. Thank you.